And welcome to episode 5, season 3 of Rainbow Bridge Connection. I'm Kayla, and today I have an awesome guest. I say it every time, and I'm not going to stop saying it. I'm not going to apologize for that. today we have Kendra, who's the Director of Development of International Hearing Dog. Hi, Kendra.
Hello.
We are excited to have you on the show. We typically do like grief related stuff, but I always kind of like mixing it up because it can get kind of taxing listening to like the same thing over and over again and talking about grief. So I am so excited to talk to you and talk about what you have to talk about. So if you want to get started, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me a little bit about, well, not a little bit. Tell me about International Hearing Dog.
Yes. Well, first off, thank you so much for having us. We are a small but mighty organization, so we always love opportunities to share our mission, expand our community, that kind of thing. I serve as the organization's director of development, so I get to head up all things marketing, social media, donor relations, community outreach, donor support, that kind of stuff. So kind of the creative side, while also the donor relations side of things. I've always had a big kind of heart for the philanthropic world, grew up working in rescues, working at and volunteering at therapeutic riding centers, Make-A-Wish, Relay for Life, that kind of thing. And when I moved to Colorado about 5 years ago, I had been in a sales and marketing job and just knew my heart wasn't in it. And when I moved to Colorado, I kind of told myself I was going to find the job that, it's cliche, but, you know, set your heart on fire, one that you love what you do every single day. And I ended up finding International Hearing Dog and was kind of able to join that philanthropic side with my love for animals, animal welfare, community, that kind of stuff. And then I have been there ever since and have loved every day of it. And it's an easy mission to live for every day. We train service dogs for the deaf and hard of hearing is the basis of what our organization is. Hearing dogs can be a very new term for many people, but I just kind of explain it as just as guide dogs would be for the low vision community. We serve the deaf and hard of hearing community. We are a fully nonprofit organization. So we are fully funded by donor support foundations and grants. And so we are really a community run organization. Very unique thing about our program is that we do not charge for our services. We never want finances to be a hindrance of anyone being able to seek out our services and have a hearing dog during their life. So we fundraise and sponsor that whole side of it. And then it's invested about $20,000. So that's a big take on per dog. And so that's where my role comes in with just the fun online fundraising, in-person events, getting people involved in our new programs and mission, and then just having people join in on the training of our dogs and then their graduation and their team matching as well. But the basis of a hearing dog is that they will alert to sounds both in the home and out in public. Each dog is custom trained to we start on 3 sounds and then build off of it per the client's need. So the dog will start with their training and alerting to the front door, whether that be a knock or a ring, the phone, and then the smoke detector. And those are the 3 basic sounds we just start on. Make sure we have a good platform, and then we go from there. It can be little things like your microwave beeping, all the way up to emergency sirens. People have really always endured like their tea kettle, but it's just little day-to-day things like your washing machine, letting you know your load is ready, your load is done. Someone calling your name out in public or at a meeting or in the work environment. They also can assist with picking up and notifying of dropped items. So, you know, for instance, if your keys were to fall out your back pocket, the dog will notify you of that dropped item and retrieve it for you as well. And yeah, right now we are located in Colorado. We've been around for about 40 years, so we have a pretty rich history, but we do serve all 50 states as well as Canada. And in those 40 years, we've placed over 1,400 hearing service dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is bananas.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your guys' process in terms of what dogs do you guys choose and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's a very extensive process. It's headed up by our training team. So we have 3 full-time trainers on our team that do all of the evaluation and selection of our dogs. But each dog goes through a pretty rigorous evaluation to make sure that we're bringing dogs in that are, it sounds blunt, but that are worth putting our time into. Right. We want to make sure that we're bringing in dogs that we do see a potential for success. And we get dogs from different avenues. So one way that we can get them is from other service dog organizations. For example, with guide dogs, a very important aspect of who that dog is their gait and how that dog walks to be able to provide that leading assistance. Whereas with a hearing dog, their gait, as long, you know, we need them to walk nicely and professionally in a nice heel, but the manner in which they walk is not important for their tasks and for their job. So we're able to take in dogs, for example, like that wouldn't work for guide dog work, but could have potential in hearing dog work. We do take in puppies as well. So dogs that have been purpose bred for service dog work, we're able to take them in as well. And then we do work with rescues and shelters. We kind of have worked on training some of the intake teams at our local rescues and shelters to notify us of if a dog comes in with the potential of what we're looking for. With shelter and rescue dogs, it does just get, it gets tougher, and the success rate goes down significantly. Just because we don't know what that dog's past was. We don't know their past experiences, their genetics, you know, their health, that kind of stuff. So we do work really hard to try and take in shelter and rescue dogs. And we do actually have some really fun success stories from that avenue. But it does just, it does add a little extra to the equation, just trying to see, you know, learn who that dog is and what their past years have looked like. And then going from there and building a confident dog. And we always want to make sure too that the dogs love their job. Mm-hmm. Being a hearing dog, they have to be on the clock 24/7, 365 days a year. So if an alarm goes off at 3 a.m., that dog has to love their job enough and have a drive enough to get up and alert to that sound. For example, I have a dog that if an alarm went off at 3 a.m., he'd maybe lift his head and say, well, hopefully someone else gets that. so we really are looking for that drive. And that's when our trainers go in to evaluate a dog. For example, if they're going in and evaluating a puppy, even if it's a litter that was raised specifically for service dog work, they might go in, it could be a litter of 10 puppies, and they could flag 2 as having potential, even though those dogs were specifically trained, specifically bred for what the work that we're looking for. I think that really just shows how innate and kind of the diamond in the rough we're looking for in those dogs. Mm-hmm. But some of the funny little things that they'll do, for example, for a puppy test, our trainers will bring in a puzzle and they'll hide some really high value treats in there. And then they will set that puzzle down and they will kind of watch and just observe that puppy and see the drive that that puppy has to get that reward, where there could be a puppy that'll walk up, you know, do some sniffing. There's a treat in there, but I don't know how to get to it. I'm not going to get to it. Where there could be the puppy then that walks up and is like, there's a treat in there and I'm going to figure out how to get it. Mm-hmm. And so really it's a simple test, but it shows kind of that dog's interest, their curiosity, and then their drive to reach that reward. They'll do things too, simple things like they'll bring in a metal bowl and they will drop that metal bowl. And it's totally fine for a dog to react. They can startle, but then we're looking for to be able to come back after that startle.
Right.
We're looking for them to be able to go to that bowl, you know, kind of be like, oh, what was that for a moment? But then have that confidence to then go investigate what made that that sound and that noise. They'll do just the typical too. They'll kind of play with their toes, wiggle their ears. They'll generally bring a vest with them, a little puppy and training vest, just because body sensitivity can be something that comes up in puppies and in dogs, where having a vest or a cape on their back is just not something they are comfortable with. They'll kind of, you know, squirm up a little bit and just they don't enjoy that feeling. But then it's everything too of just looking at, they'll walk into a room and they'll stand there and they'll wait to see which puppy has the desire to come meet them, or which puppy, you know, just is like, oh, new person, that's cool. Again, just looking for that bond, looking for that dog that's looking to interact and associate with humans and who wants to be with them and wants to, you know what you're doing. And then that's just the process of bringing a puppy in. And then it just goes from there of, you know, how that dog takes on outings and healing and cues and sound too is a big thing that they'll test right away. They'll bring in little like toy fire trucks that have sirens, and they'll bring in smoke detectors too, because the sound of a smoke detector is not one that many dogs would enjoy or have interest in learning more about. So that's a big tester for a hearing dog, is just making sure that that sound isn't one that they'll startle to, that they, if they startle, they'll come back from, and they have interest in investigating that sound as well. So those are kind of fun, some of the fun little tests that they do when evaluating a puppy. When we get a dog from another service dog program, you know, we kind of get their reports, we get their write-up, we know kind of who this dog is, their strengths, maybe where they could use a little more work in and that kind of thing. But yeah, that's kind of the quick overview of what they do. But generally we are working with labs, goldens and poodles, and then sometimes mixes thereof. Those are just the dogs that historically, they have the personality, the traits, the drive, that we're looking for in a service dog.
Mm. Yeah. So after all of this, so you find a dog that possibly could work in your program, and mm-hmm. then you have someone come in that is in need of mm-hmm. one of these dogs. I assume there's going to be extensive training with the team of them, with a trainer to be able to work with them to make sure they mesh. Is that something that?
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually coined the term that like we put the same amount of training in our dogs as we do our clients. We have online modules, coursework, all that kind of stuff. Basically you could view it as like an online class that they'll be taking prior to coming to our facility. And then prior to that, even there's just a ton of education and getting to know that person as an individual, you know, what their day-to-day life looks like, how often they're traveling, what their home life looks like, their activity level, all that kind of stuff. In simple terms, I'm not the matchmaker in the program. Our social worker does that. But I like to coin it as like an online dating service. We look at the individual, their needs, their wants, their lifestyle, activity level, and then we look at the dogs in our program and we pair them for what we feel would be the most successful team. In those online courses then and whatnot, individual learns everything from, you know, body handling and positive reinforcement and clicker training, all the way up to how to advocate for yourself as a service dog handler and being protected under the ADA. And then the individuals come to our organization for team training, which is 8 to 10 days at our facility with our trainers. And it is, again, kind of a mixture of classwork and in-person work, in environment work. So they'll be working in class with our trainers hands-on, again, just working on everything that we've trained that dog for the last 2 years, and passing that leash over to the new handler. And then from there, they will do a ton of public outings. They'll go to grocery stores. They will be going to on public transit. They'll head to the airport. So it is a big mixture of just combining everything that both parties have been learning and working on to put that team fully together.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was kind of worried, or not worried. I always wondered about that because I have had some experience with you know, the dogs for the blind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that it's like a very extensive process and it's very, you know, involved, but I never really thought about it in terms of a hearing dog as well. It would probably, it just as extensive, just as, you know, interesting to pair them and all that stuff. So say a dog comes into your program, you get it through the program, and then it, you know, maybe something happens through the program that you guys decide like maybe the dog isn't really that great at proceeding with being a hearing dog? What do you guys usually do in that situation?
So the nice term is career change. Some people term them as dropouts. But if a dog doesn't end up working for service dog work, whether it just be, you know, you can tell they just don't have that drive and love for it, or maybe it's just simply something that, you know, some dogs can really struggle with small items for a pet, but for a service dog, it's a big item. Right. You know, alert barking. Some dogs just can't reach that threshold of getting over prey drive. You know, it's something we can work on really hard, but, you know, you can't change the dog at the core. You know, we can work on some of the items and, you know, mold a little bit, but there might be a dog that if there's a squirrel at the park, it's going to be very hard for them to take their interest off that squirrel and put it back on you. And so it's really small items like that that'll just pop up. Sometimes health items will pop up, you know, or just the sound alerts as well. Some dogs, you know, will kind of take their time to do their alert, and you can just tell their heart's maybe not in it. But otherwise, yeah, alert barking. Some dogs just have trouble keeping focus in public, which is I struggle with that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's just really working through who has that drive to have their job first. But yeah, if the dog does not make it with our program, they are career changed, and then they're just adopted out to the public as a pet. So they're just adopted out as a very well-trained pet, who then can go on and choose their path of just a companion pet. We say that every dog who comes into our program, when they walk through that door, they join the hearing dog family, and we're committed to them to finding their perfect place in the world, whether that be, you know, we've had some dogs that service dog to kind of go into a private practice therapy and work as just a therapy dog there within that counseling center. But otherwise, we've had dogs just become great family pets who get to play fetch for hours on end and have joined their perfect area of the family too.
That's awesome. Yeah. I did see that. That's why I led with that question, because I followed you guys for a very long time, actually, on social medias. And awesome. I did see a couple of times where you'll post a dog and be like, mm-hmm. you know, this dog, you know, is a great, great, great dog, but, you know, mm-hmm. it didn't really make it through the program and they're up for adoption. And mm-hmm. I always thought that that was really fantastic that you guys do that, because I always kind of wondered, like, what happens if, you know, a dog turns out to be great, because, you know, with puppies especially, they can mm-hmm. start out being one way and then 180 into a completely different dog, you know, as they age. And so I always kind of wondered, like, what does that look like if the dog's, like, you know, starts out really strong and mm-hmm. you know, is really good, like you said, with the triggers and all that, and then all of a sudden one day is like, no. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this anymore.
And yeah, in training from puppy to placement, it's about 2 years. So yeah, a lot can come up in 2 years of, you know, items that just that dog might not be fit for. So yeah, they will mm-hmm. just be career changed. And we're a small but mighty team of 6 full-time employees. And of those 6 employees, 5 of the 6 have adopted career changed dogs. So we all have a little part of hearing dog at our home too.
I love that. So tell me, what does it look like? So you guys pull dogs and you put them into your program. Are you foster based? Are they living with the trainers? You have a facility. Tell me about that.
So we are fully puppy raiser based. Historically, the organization had kennels on site, but that has always been a goal of us to be able to step away from. It just kennel environment for an extended period of time just isn't wonderful for anyone. It's not something you would choose for a dog. And so it had always been a goal of us to step away from that. And it was just building the program on the back end to be able to do so. And so now we are fully puppy raiser based. That is a volunteer role. And we kind of coined the term that the puppy raisers open their hearts and their homes to a puppy in training. We provide all of the supplies, the food, the equipment, all of that. And we do all of the professional training, or the advanced training would be the proper term. But then we just really ask that the individuals help uphold it within the home. And they're there to kind of help the dog explore the world more, gain confidence, have just a fun home to, yeah, build that confidence, engage with the world, build new experiences, that kind of thing. And then we do have weekly puppy classes or handling classes that are individuals the puppy raisers have to attend with their dog. Otherwise, the dogs are in our facility with us, I would say, depending on the dog and where they're at in their training, they'll come to our facility 3 to 5 days a week. And that's a mixture of their puppy raisers dropping them off on their way to work, or we kind of go in caravan and have a little bit of a doggy taxi service as well. But yeah, we are fully puppy raiser based. And right now it is definitely our biggest need. Stepping away from those kennels right now, we are, the number of puppy raisers is, if we had two applications today, we could have those two individuals puppies within a couple of weeks. Is that right now our biggest roadblock is just that we don't have enough puppy raisers, which I think you'll hear across the board for service dog organizations. Everyone is always in need of more puppy raisers. And it's just the simple math of when we have more puppy raisers, we can bring in more service dogs. And then we can serve more clients. So right now that is our biggest volunteer role. It's a pretty cool program that we've built out, and it's just been really fun to see just even the community growth that can come from that kind of volunteer opportunity. Our individuals, again, depending on the dog's age, their experience level, confidence out in public, they can go with the individual to their place of work. They can go with them on the grocery run, that kind of thing. And so just that much exposure too for the program. We have fun little t-shirts that say on the back, you know, ask me about puppy raising. And it's just a volunteers and volunteer community is just it's such a vital part to a nonprofit and organization in building that, that extra level of community and involvement. And so having our puppy raisers have been a huge growth for our program. And they're wonderful individuals. It's a really cool opportunity for, you know, it's a mixture. We see a mixture of people of families that are just looking to kind of take on a family project. We've had individuals who are looking to possibly go into trait dog training down the road, social workers. We have had right now one of our puppies is being raised by an individual who just recently lost her dog. And knew that she wasn't ready to take on another 10 plus year commitment, but missed having a dog in her life. And so we were kind of that perfect little puzzle piece to be able to fill that puppy love part of her life, but also know that in 1 to 2 years, that dog will be going on to service someone's ears. So yeah, we kind of have some fun different walks of life that are able to join us.
Yeah. Did you guys hear what she just said? If you guys do not want the commitment, say you have just lost a companion animal, you could, you know, make a commitment to them where you help them out with, you not only are you doing something to heal your heart, but you're also doing something for another person, for the puppy, for the organization. That was fantastic. Cause I was thinking the same thing. You know, there was two things that you said during that I was like, yeah, absolutely. Is first, like, if you're not ready for the commitment to have another companion animal, you can do it in a capacity where you know that, yes, they're going to have to leave, but not in the they're passing away capacity. And then the second thing that you said is, you know, social workers. Holy moly, I didn't even think of that. Even counseling. If you're a counselor and you can do this through counseling, you can bring the dog, you know, to you to sessions or whatever and work on that, you know, still helping you guys out, but also, you know, exposing the dog to, you know, maybe different clients, you know, and helping with therapy or whatever. That's fantastic. I didn't even think about those capacities. So yeah. Are they always going to be puppies that you are, when you're doing this, it's going to be a puppy and then they grow with you, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
So it'll kind of depend again on who the dog is that we're bringing in. Mm-hmm. For example, we just had a dog from another service dog program come to us who's already a couple of years old. Mm-hmm. And so he's just kind of, he'll be with us, you know, for a shorter period of time. because he already has such a great foundation. And so that was a perfect fit. We had an individual who lives in an apartment a couple floors up. And so pairing her with a brand new puppy wouldn't necessarily be setting them up for success in regards to potty training and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a matching too, as well, of just what the individual's lifestyle looks like and whatnot. So we do have definitely a good amount of puppies coming in, but then we do have the opportunity that, you know, and I understand I have no interest in potty training a puppy. So I would be looking for the older dog. Mm-hmm. And so we are able to kind of match people as well. Based on, again, their lifestyle and that kind of stuff.
Cool. So what are the qualifications? Tell me what the qualifications are for someone to be a puppy raiser.
Yep. So right now we have a 8 to 10 month commitment. We have a little leeway on there, as every once in a while we are in need of puppy sitters. For example, with spring break coming up, or just coming up recently, we had some families traveling and whatnot that it just wouldn't be a great environment for the dog to come on. It just wasn't going to, they weren't going to be traveling with them. And so we were just looking for individuals to help out for that week long period. But otherwise the gold star that we would be looking for is that 8 to 10 month commitment. We do have kind of an application that they have to go through. Again, just making sure we're setting up for success. We have to make sure they're on the same pages for positive reinforcement for our training. And then we do, you know, the basic home check, the background check. If they have pets in the family, we do have a pretty strict criteria just to make sure that everyone's going to enjoy this new member of the family and that this new member of the family will be enjoyed as well. We make sure everyone's on board, make sure everyone kind of understands the level of commitment as well. And we do hands-on training classes too with them, just to make sure that they kind of understand, you know, get to see how we train and then how we would expect them to kind of continue within the home, out on walks, that kind of thing. And then from there, we do some reference checks. And then if everything goes well, they just kind of wait for their puppy or for their dog that'll fit with them. But yeah, we kind of do the whole, you know, standard application, background check, that kind of thing. And then from there, we build onto the training side of it, of just, we have them come in, they can observe a class. And then from there, we work on just their dog handling and their dog experience and that kind of thing too.
Cool. 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 Yeah. So it sounds pretty like, if you love dogs and you're willing to commit that time, you mm-hmm. should do it.
We would love to have anyone join. Yes.
And yes. So I assume probably Colorado only for right now, until, you know, because then they have to go and meet with your trainers and be able, yes. you know, to meet up and all that stuff. So Colorado only. Is there a specific like location in Colorado that you guys prefer, like maybe a 30-mile radius or something to that effect, to make sure that they're like close enough to go for mm-hmm. the meetups and stuff like that?
Yeah, right now we advertise it as Denver Metro. But for example, we have an individual who's up in Pine, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So that's a good, you know, 45-minute drive. And so it's really their level of commitment to it, just making sure they understand that, you know, you can be an hour drive away, but you do just need to commit that weekly class to us. And then we do kind of look at the roadmap too of, okay, this staff member could pick that dog up on their way in and whatnot. So there's a little logistics side to it as well. Mm-hmm. But right now we do kind of advertise it as, yeah, the Denver Metro community.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because I was like, I almost am 100% sure they do like foster-based, you know, training. And that's, I feel like that's the coolest thing. I unfortunately, or fortunately, I have three dogs who are very not well behaved. So it would not be a good situation trying to bring a dog in that, because they like feed off of each other's like energy. Like I had one dog yeah. that had anxiety, and they all of a sudden, one of them, the other one started having anxiety because they were watching the other one have anxiety.
The anxiety gave them anxiety. Yes. Yeah,
not a good situation. So, but that's such a great program, and I'm glad that you could, you know, talk about it. And if you guys are interested, do you want to say like where we can find you and sure. where you can apply and all of that?
Yeah. So right now we are on Facebook and Instagram. Obviously, if you're a dog lover, lots of fun dog photos there, but we also really work hard to share different deaf events in the deaf community, resources as well. So while we do have the fun puppy photos, we also want to make sure our channels are a great network and resource for our community as well. So we are on Instagram and Facebook. It's at Intel, it'll be INTL Hearing Dog. But if you just look up International Hearing Dog, you'll see our little logo of a dog with an orange vest. And then our website is just www.hearingdog.org. That is where you can go to and just learn more about our different programs, our training, our organization, the different volunteer opportunities. And then that would be where a individual who is interested in a hearing dog can kind of learn more about, you know, the expectations, the application, what is required of them. Right now, our application is currently closed. And so we have a waitlist for our application. Being the only hearing dog specific organization, there is a huge need. And so right now we are serving those applications that we currently have. Our goal is to reopen the full application again in 2024. But right now just working on serving those clients that we have currently in our database and letting them have our full focus. Otherwise Instagram, Facebook, and the website. We would love to have people follow along and just see kind of more about what we are.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. So yeah. I have one last question and then we'll wrap it up.
Sounds
As
good.
a hearing individual, what advice could you give to the hearing listeners that mm-hmm. would make it a little bit easier on the hearing impaired and non-hearing community?
One big thing is captioning your content. It's a very easy way to just make sure that it's accessible to everyone. For the most part, it's pretty easy to add captions. There are some social media platforms that still need to work on their accessibility features. Mm-hmm. We are really lucky too to get to work with a lot of ASL programs within the local high school and college community. And I think that's just, it's a wonderful offering. I wish ASL had been offered to me in high school. Mm-hmm. And not only on top of learning the American Sign Language, but then they just have a huge part of it built into the deaf and hard of hearing culture and community as well. And just learning about their community and their culture and their history. Learning ASL, huge one. I mean, being able to communicate in that way and just being able to be a welcoming face when someone is signing, that you can just say, hey, you know, that means the world to them. Captioning your content. I would say even just attending deaf or hard of hearing events. For example, we were just at Deafopia, which is a traveling conference that their mission is really to just increase and bring awareness to the deaf ecosystem. So it was all different deaf creators, artists, that kind of thing, that just all set up shop, and we're all there to sell their products, share more about their organizations. Again, with the social media too, just going on and, you know, following deaf creators, deaf artists, and supporting businesses like that as well. We have some really fun businesses that we're able to support through we do like our post-it notes, our patches. We work really hard to make sure that we are partnering with and helping our community in that aspect as well. I'm sure I am forgetting many huge items, and just, you know, having patience out in the world too. You never know. Being deaf is an invisible disability. I don't love the word disability, but that is, it's an invisible. We've heard of clients who are out at the grocery store who they get rammed in the back of the legs with a grocery cart because someone has been saying, excuse me. They do not hear it, but that individual just takes that as, oh, this individual, they're being rude, they're not listening to me, and they will ram them with a cart. So I think the biggest thing too is just have patience and be kind. Like everyone has something going on, and just, yeah, seeking to learn more about those that aren't like you. I think that can go across the board with many things of, be kind, be patient, and take it upon yourself to learn about people outside of your circle.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. We interviewed somebody who had a service dog. She was a celiac a celiac dog. And I asked her this, and I want to ask you real quick, and then we'll be done. But if you encounter somebody, say just me is walking into a store and we encounter somebody that has an international hearing dog, how should we interact? Should I know that there's, you know, with specifically with service dogs, you want to make sure that you're not running up on the people trying to pet their dog because they're working, you know, all of that stuff. How would you want us as the general public to interact with somebody that has or interact with a international hearing dog or somebody that has an international hearing dog?
So the best thing is just to do nothing. This is an individual who is just on their daily grocery run. They want to get in, they want to get out just like you do. It can, you know, it gets hard with kids and whatnot, but I think it's just really important for people and individuals to learn that these dogs have a job. They're there for that reason. They have that right to be there as well. And just to let them focus on that job and let that handler do what they are there to do. Also, just in, if you do need to interact with the handler. You don't need to be talking to the dog. Just because they have a service dog doesn't mean that they're not a person there. You can speak to them just as you would anyone else. But you do often see, you know, people trying to take photos or whistling, or even when the sign very clearly says, do not pet, trying to pet. It just, following those basic rules just allows them to live their life and allows that dog to provide that assistance that they are there to do without, you know, all the extra everything going on. And it's just important to know that, yeah, those dogs are there for a purpose and they have a special and important job to focus on. And it, we just want to let them focus and let that team do whatever they are there to do. But yeah, just that important, you know, don't, no whistling, no calling, please don't ask to pet. I know they're generally really cute and they're really well behaved and just so admire from afar if you need. But really the best thing to do is just do nothing. They are there just like you and I. And you know, yeah, whether it be their grocery run or to go see a movie at the theater, they are there for that purpose. And they're just there to enjoy that moment as well.
Awesome. 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 Well, thanks, Kendra. I appreciate you spending the time and coming on the show and talking about International Hearing Dog. And I really hope you guys go like and follow their social medias. If you can't, you know, help them out in the capacity of, you know, being a puppy raiser, I'm sure they always would be looking for donations since they are a nonprofit, or even just a like or follower sharing their stuff. You know, we want to get the word out, not in just in Colorado. We want, being that they service, you know, the United States, we want to get the word out about them and, you know, really, you know, make them grow.
Yes, we would love that. Yeah. Any nonprofit, there's always, you know, their Amazon wish list, but yeah, really the best free way you can support an organization is just spreading the word and sharing their content and just helping them build their community in that way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for spending time and coming on the show. And I will link your guys' website and your social medias on this episode as well, so you guys can go check it out and you can see all the awesome content that they have.
Awesome. Well, thank you. This is my first podcast, so I hope I did all right.
You did
and
great.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it. I love that you were a follower, and then from there you wanted to share our mission further. So thank you so much for having us. And have a wonderful day, everyone.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.